Hi, everybody. You are listening to The Youth Vote, where we explore the different ways that young people interact with politics. I'm Isaac Goff Mitchell. The younger generation now tells me how to do it. Before I get into today's agenda, I wanted to share a few different ways that you can help out the show. If you really enjoy The Youth Vote, follow us on Instagram or Twitter at TheYouthVote1. That's The Youth Vote and the number 1. Leave a review wherever it is that you listen to podcasts, or just share the podcast with your friends. Getting into today's episode, I spoke again with Rahila Ahmed, who you might remember was one of the very first guests we had on the show. Together, we discussed ways that school districts are adapting to the continuous COVID-19 pandemic. She also talked about her new ventures into activism work, focusing on how to increase the youth turnout. Stay tuned. So before anything, I just want to give the context that you were the first person I ever recorded, and the first episode I ever released was your episode. And that was back in April of 2020. And since then, the COVID pandemic has kind of become much more than it was. I remember we actually talked about it a little bit in that last episode, and we talked about kind of how, like, we didn't know what the implications of it were going to be for schools and for school districts across the country. And now I think we definitely have a better idea. And also, we've had this monumental presidential election. And so just before we get into any of the politics stuff and all of that, I just wanted to ask you, as like a young leader who's dealt with all of these things going on, just like, how are you doing and how are you handling all of the stress of like the moment that we're living in right now?
Isaac, first off, thank you so much for bringing me on. It's been really exciting to see the evolution of this podcast over the course of the past year. And I thank you also for asking me how I'm doing. I think that's a question that has been more present in my life in terms of me asking that and me receiving that question. And I think that to me is a really positive thing when it comes to how folks are interacting with each other during this time and have been interacting with folks during this time. How I'm doing is, it's really day by day, to be very honest. I think being in the position that I'm in currently as a school board member, it has been a very difficult year because education has looked so different over the course of this past year than I have ever seen it, and that generations before me have ever seen it. I will be honest with you, when the pandemic first hit, we were scrambling to make sure that our students were getting the technology needed to learn. And even when that happened, there were still thousands of students in my school district that were not logging on. And for me, that was a huge stressor of trying to figure out, where are our students and are they okay? And what are their families going through at this time? Even now, we still have several students that haven't logged on or aren't logging on. And for me, the piece of concern there is understanding that our schools are safety beacons for our community. And the fact that students are not going in person means that that no longer is a safe haven. And so for me, I think that that has been a really big concern for me, the safety of our students, specifically when it comes to what type of mental health they may be going through at this time, as well as, are they learning and what is learning loss looking like for them in this moment. So those have been the most immediate stressors, the most immediate concerns that I've had, alongside reopening. So we're in a process now of trying to reopen schools and figure out how does that look like in a way that's going to be safe for everybody that is going to be in that building. And trying to figure out a plan for that has been difficult, because there are two very distinct and competing priorities here, which is the physical health of individuals that we care about and ensuring that students are learning and we're educating in the way that is needed for our students to succeed. So that has been the most immediate thing.
Right. And something that I've noticed is there's been a lot of conversation, and I think most of us now have experienced this kind of digital aspect of work or school or kind of whatever space you're in right now. What I wanted to ask you though is, what does it look like to transition back to this in person, or like you said, to reopen schools? So like, I guess my question is, what are some of the specific steps that you're taking to make sure that safety is prioritized, not just for students, but also for the, you know, the staff and the administrators and just all the people who are going to be in those schools?
Yeah, so I think that there are different pieces of that. The one that is most present in my head right now is that our school district is working to make sure that our school-based staff have the opportunity to get the vaccine if they so choose to do so, which I think is really important in making sure that we're creating safe spaces for our students. The other piece of that is making sure that there are appropriate cleaning protocols in place, proper disinfecting of common areas, and making sure that whatever plan is going to be in place will ensure that as many CDC guidelines as are stated can be followed, given the restraints of the district. And so those are some specific things that come to mind. But even beyond that, I think what we cannot truly 100% prepare for is the social aspect of things, right? Our schools are going to look a lot different than pre-pandemic in terms of closeness, in terms of affirmations, in terms of not even physically being able to see expressions of people because of wearing masks. And so what the entire experience of school will look like will be different. I'll be honest with you, I'm afraid that it will be more cold than normal, because those social cues that folks are so accustomed to seeing and knowing and understanding and are very important in the process of relationship building and educating are not going to be there. And so that is a concern that I don't know that we can truly 100% prepare for, but it's a factor in the process of reopening.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about the like psychological, I guess, aspects of what does education look like with everybody in a mask. So I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something that I think slipped my mind and maybe a lot of other people's minds. I do want to ask you, and I don't know if you even know the answer to this yet, but at least in your school district, what does the timeline look like as far as, so like while we're doing this recording, it's February 5th of 2021. Like, when do you see schools go fully back in person? And then when do you start to kind of pull away some of those restrictions? Is it like when a certain amount of people are vaccinated, or I guess I just don't know how those decisions are made.
Yeah, so those details are still being figured out by our school district. I will say in Maryland, a lot of our requirements and a lot of our guidelines are coming from the state. So the State Department of Education, the state superintendent, and the governor. In a recent press conference by the governor, he had indicated wanting schools to reopen by March, by the beginning of March. Now, that's not a binding thing, but it is something to factor in and consider. I know that there are other school districts that are already beginning hybrid learning across their districts, but in my county, in Prince George's County, we're just not there yet because our positivity rates are so high. And so what reopening will look like here is going to be very different than other parts of the state. But those are all factors that need to be considered in the process of reopening and that are being discussed by executives in our school district now.
Yeah, no. So the last thing I wanted to ask about related to kind of the pandemic and education is, have parents in your school district been mostly receptive to the changes and to the adaptations you've had to make? Or has it been, I guess, difficult to get parents to go along with some of these proposed changes that the school district has had to implement?
It's been a mixed bag, to be honest. And I think it goes back to values, Isaac. It really goes back to what are those things that you care about? What is your perspective, your lived experience, and how does that shape your view? I would definitely say at the beginning, there was a lot more consensus around the fact that we need to not be in the building to figure out what's going on. I think at this point in time, there is a push and pull between two entities. Folks that understand that, you know, they're and see that their child is not learning effectively and efficiently and wanting to see some type of change for that. And folks that are not wanting to put their child in an environment where they could be physically catch COVID. And so it's a bit of a mixed bag right now. And both points are valid. I think that is what makes it so much more important to allow for flexibility and a little bit of autonomy when it comes to parents and students deciding how and when they want to go back to school. One of the things that has been at the forefront for me that I've communicated and that other colleagues on my board have communicated is the desire to create and build a virtual school for our school district, where students that prefer this method of learning, prefer virtual learning, are able to receive a virtual education beyond the pandemic. So that's one thing that I think we need to think about and develop and learn that the pandemic has forced us to think about, is that students really learn positively in different ways, and being able to create avenues, pathways for individualized learning is important to student success.
Yeah, that's interesting to think. Would you even say like that's almost like a positive thing that's come out of the pandemic, is maybe that like education systems are going to be able to update and modernize and have these virtual schools?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely forced us to innovate, right? One of the big things that our district was looking at pre-pandemic is how do we slowly get students to be one-to-one when it comes to technology? How do we make sure that there's a device available to any student that needs it? And the pandemic forced that to happen very quickly, very rapidly. And so now we're in a space where because there were so many rapid changes, and you know, there's a very big unknown of how we can move forward or what will happen for the next 6 months, a year, 2 years, this is an opportunity for innovation for education overall. And I know that our IT department is really looking at a lot of those different avenues and seeing what is possible. But it really, there's a real opportunity here to redefine education and reimagine education. And I'm very excited by that.
Yeah, no, I like that we're able to at least find some positives that have come out of the crazy time that we're in right now. I do want to shift focus away from education now, though, to talk about some of your activism work. So people who listened to that the first episode with you, we really focused in on education. And I think it might be interesting to talk about. So you are the deputy director for the Campus Vote Project. Could you just speak a little bit to what the Campus Vote Project is and what it is that you do with them?
Sure. So the Campus Vote Project is based out of the Fair Election Center. And it is an organization that's focused on institutionalizing voting on college campuses. And so we have a number of state coordinators that work with college administrators and students to ensure that there are plans in place to allow for students to vote and make sure that that is a part of the culture of that school, that voting is prioritized and that voting is present and that there's an easy way for students to access voting. It is really exciting to be a part of that work. I'd like to think that the organization had a little piece of the success that came out of this last election, where we had historic youth turnout. And it's really exciting for me to see so many young people coming out and voting, and so many folks that are committed to seeing that happen. So our impact was very large this past year, wherein about a dozen states, and we have our hands in many more. It's been really exciting to see the work of institutionalization continue into 2021. I think that's a big part of this as well, right? Like, civic engagement is not just about a moment. It's not just about an election. It's about making sure that folks are constantly and consistently aware of their rights to be civically engaged and what it means to be civically engaged outside of the political process of voting. One way that that manifested very strongly was so many students stepping up to be poll workers in this last election, especially historically with poll workers not being young students, and with the pandemic, so many folks that are at risk no longer being able to be poll workers, a huge surge in students signing up to be poll workers, and our organization had a big part in that by helping to recruit those student poll workers. So it's just really cool to see the different ways that folks can stay civically engaged and making sure that there is a plan, a process, and support for that to happen.
Yeah, could you talk a little bit to why it's so important specifically to engage young people in politics and get young people to turn out? Because I feel like sometimes people almost take it for granted. They're like, yeah, like young people should get involved, but then they don't exactly like explain why that's a good thing. Does that like question make sense? I don't know if that's just confusing.
No, it makes sense. I think that at the end of the day, the decisions that are being made now are going to affect youth. Like, the decisions that are happening now are the ones that Generation Z and millennials will have to work with and deal with for years to come. At the end of the day, if there's no other motivation or interest in being involved civically, this is the core of why it's important for young people to be involved, because we're going to be affected by it, and we are affected by it. And so that, I think, is at the crux of why it's important. I also think another reason is that, you know, when you look at what works and what is successful from a policy standpoint, it is those policies that have buy-in from all stakeholders. If you don't have buy-in from stakeholders, whatever you're proposing won't have the same level of impact as ones that do. And I can speak to that from my personal perspective, being a policymaker on the school board. It really is those policies where you build buy-in from all stakeholders that are the ones that get implemented, that are done with fidelity, that are held to a standard of accountability, and that work. And so with missing pieces, with missing voices, that doesn't always happen.
And then one of the last questions I have for you is, listeners of this podcast, so now that since we've last spoke in April, we actually have data now. So I know, like, I think it's 91% of the people who listen to this podcast are between the age of 18 and 29. So it's this kind of young audience. What can these listeners do if they want to help get engaged and turn out the youth vote? Or are there ways that they could get involved with Campus Vote Project?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question, Isaac. Through Campus Vote Project, we have a student advisory board. And that student advisory board has helped launch a for students by students platform for civic engagement. It's called the Student Voting Network. And right now it's a Slack channel with nearly 700 people from across the country, 700 students from across the country that are sharing information about how to stay civically active, engaged, how to promote democracy reform on college campuses, and make sure that our country as a whole is friendly and willing and able to activate young people. And so I would very much suggest, if you are still a student, to be involved in the Student Voting Network Slack. I'll share that with you, Isaac, the details for that. But I think that's one good way to get involved. And even if you don't know the beginning step, at least being in that space with other civic leaders may spark something in you to be like, aha, this is the thing I want to work on.
Wonderful. And then the last thing I want to ask you is kind of pivoting away from the focus just on voting. Like I had mentioned, it's been a year with a lot going on. We had the pandemic, we had the election, and then just in 2021, we had the insurrection. So there's a lot of kind of negativity, I would say, floating in our political sphere. Is there anything that you would like to say to that young audience of people who maybe are trying to swim through all of that negativity? You, as somebody who serves as a young leader in multiple capacities, like, do you have a message for some of these young listeners?
Oh, wow. Isaac, as you're saying that, I'm looking at all of the different sticky notes that I've put on my wall to keep me encouraged. And so maybe what would be helpful is sharing some of those post-it notes that are on my wall. One of the ones I have here is assume positive intent. Another one is stand in your own power. Another one is look for the gift. And the last one I'll share here is actually a quote from the presidential inauguration from President Biden that says, "It's time for boldness. There is so much to do."
I love that. I especially love that last one, because I think that that kind of sums up the idea we try to push with this show, is that, like, young people don't need to wait till they're older. It's, you know, they can jump in now. And you serve as a great example of where that has worked out really well. And so, yeah, thank you so much for speaking with me and answering my questions. I really appreciate
it. Thank you for having me, Isaac.
Okay, thank you so much to Rahila for speaking with me today. She made a joke that we'll have to do this every year, so I guess, Rahila, I will talk to you again in 2022. To everyone else, thanks so much for tuning in, and make sure to tune in next time for a great episode.